You're listening to Nowhere in Mulberry, film, television, pop culture. It's where you find it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our Goonies movie mini. Yes, the Goonies. We have time traveled to the year 1985. It is June 7th. Goonies has just been released in the theaters, Bill. I am, I believe, 13. And
I'm six.
And you're six.
I'm 6 years old.
And I'm taking you to the movies.
You're my new best friend.
The authorities will be waiting for me outside.
Yeah, inappropriately too old.
But we've decided to revisit favorite films of the 80s. And, thinking back to Goonies, what is it about the Goonies? There's definitely the nostalgia factor there.
That's a huge part of it.
There's definitely the childhood kind of fantasy element, the whole having friends and going on adventures kind of
thing. Yeah, I think that's the biggest part of it, is having a tight group of friends and going on an adventure that kind of a mysterious adventure.
Right. You know, anything that involves a treasure map,
yes.
That's exciting. Today we're going to explore the Goonies, and we want everyone to come with us. Please join us on our adventure.
Goondocks.
And by the way, I am the Jaystrom, and this is Mulberry Bill. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
I want to introduce us there. But of course, you all know who we are because you want to listen to this, and you paid for it. So thank you very much for supporting Nowhere in Mulberry. Right, Bill?
Yes, thank you very much.
Good
thank
times.
You, thank you.
So let's get into the Goonies. I don't remember the specifics, but of course, when you're a kid that age, you see commercials for a movie, and you're like, oh, I want to see that. That looks cool. You know, I can remember, you can go on YouTube and watch the theatrical trailer, and I did, and I was thinking, there's no way I'd want to see this movie now. Just the trailer isn't that great, but when you're a kid, it really appeals to you, that whole... You can't tell what's going on, and it looks mysterious, and I don't know.
I don't even remember the trailer. The first exposure to me was probably television commercials, and then
Right. Seeing
that poster of all the kids hanging from the stalactite and then hanging onto
right.
one another.
And, of course, then in the 80s, 1985, you know the name Steven Spielberg... It's synonymous with great family entertainment, right?
Is it great family entertainment?
Oh, yes. You know, that name...
Yeah, I guess it is, the whole Amblin thing.
Dude, it's 1985. Steven Spielberg, you're guaranteed to have a great time at the movies. Think of it, Gremlins, the Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Back to the Future came out the same year, didn't it? In 1985?
I think 85, yeah.
I mean... You're guaranteed. And it's then around that time also, I'm 13 years old. I figured out that just because it has his name on it doesn't mean he directed it.
Yeah.
They're like, wait a
second.
Wasn't
it? I think the big mystery on that one was that Batteries Not Included?
Right. You're like, oh, what is this? Steven Spielberg did Batteries Not... No, he didn't. He didn't do that. He didn't do Batteries Not Included. I don't even know who directed that, but man, what a bad movie that was!
Man, that was one of those movies where the trailer and the commercials were, oh, cool, and then you go to see it and you're like, oh, what time is it? Is this almost over?
I'm still not sure I even remember all of it. It was about aliens.
I just remember being bored out of my mind and going, what's with the old people?
Yeah, Batteries Not Included was 1987.
Man. Who directed that?
Let's see. That was directed by Matthew Robbins.
Oh, he became a huge name.
Yeah, Matthew Robbins. Who the hell is Matthew Robbins?
Oh, I think that's kind of the eternal question after Batteries Not Included.
Okay, he did Corvette Summer with Mark Hamill, Dragon Slayer, The Legend of Billie Jean.
Ooh!
I've at least heard of his movies, and he did a movie called Bingo. I think
that was with the dog that goes across the country. It was like Pee-wee's Big Adventure with a dog.
That's it, 1991. The last movie he did was Bingo. So,
And The Legend of Billie Jean was the movie where Helen Slater was uber hot, right?
Right, right. She had that short do.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so 1985, Steven Spielberg produced several movies. Fandango, Goonies, Back to the Future, Young Sherlock Holmes, and, of course, he directed The Color Purple. So he had a pretty busy year that year.
Fandango.
Right, that's that Kevin Reynolds movie, isn't it, with Kevin Costner?
Oh, the road trip movie.
Right, right.
Okay, yeah.
So I never knew Steven Spielberg was involved in that in any way. It says executive producer uncredited, that's why.
Oh.
But still, and remember, this is a year after Gremlins, and the only reason I thought of Gremlins is because later on, you know, they reference Gremlins, which is pretty funny, actually. Do you remember that? In Goonies, when they referenced
the... Oh, in Goonies, yeah. I thought you were talking about Fandango. I was like, I've never seen it.
No. Okay, so let's get to Goonies. It's a childhood movie. These kids, they live on the Goondocks, right, Bill?
Yes, in Astoria, Oregon, I believe.
And these rich assholes, I guess, are buying up all the property. Which, I mean, if we go back to the history of time, how many times has that been a plot point where some rich developer is going to ruin everything for everybody?
The earliest I can remember is It's a Wonderful Life, but I'm sure it's even earlier than that.
Oh, man. Either you're going to throw a big show, you know, like to raise the money, like, or you're going to have a party, like, and have kegs and have everyone pay to get in. That'll cover the payment.
Yeah.
But in the Goonies, you're going
to... They're
going to
shut down our fraternity.
Yeah. But in Goonies, they're going to get treasure. And the one thing I've
seen, way they happen upon it is so random.
Oh, my God. That's one thing that I kind of forgot about as I've seen this so many times. And you watch the Goonies on cable. You pick it up whatever moment it is. You don't even watch it from the beginning. But as I was sitting there yesterday rewatching the Goonies, I turned the lights off, turned it up really loud. And the movie starts with... the cool skull, and it goes right into the eye hole of the skull. You know, that's
the
cool.
Eye hole.
The socket.
Yes,
eye socket.
The socket.
And, you know, you have the escape of the Fratellis. Robert Davi there, he's hanged himself. And
hey, turkey!
That's a really disturbing opening for a kid's movie. You know,
hanged.
Jail.
He's dead.
All the people, like, being escorted out of their cells. Like, you know,
yeah,
it's time to...
criminals.
Yeah, and then there's Robert Davi hanging in the cell.
Yeah, okay, dead guy. Okay, that's kind of unstable for this kid's movie. And he escapes, and they've got the cool gasoline thing set up, and they have that music, that Goonies music by, I believe, Dave Grusin.
Dave Grusin,
right.
TikTok.
That music, that music has become so iconic to movie trailers, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
That dun-dun-dun-dun. Dun. You know, that whole...
Who would have thought that someone like Dave Grusin would come up with something? I mean, when I think of movie themes...
Yeah.
That is up there in my top five of my of my childhood. I mean, it's near the top. I mean, Back to the Future, Alan Silvestri is probably the number one. I mean, you just can't beat that. But Goonies is easily number two.
Right, that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
It's such an intense, like, vibrant sense of adventure with it.
Yeah. And you know what? I really like the opening montage of introducing all the Goonies during the car chase. I think it's pretty cool.
The car chase, there's so much chaos going
it's
around.
Ridiculous.
And there's one shot of Anne Ramsey, like, eating a cracker or a sandwich. And she's so, like, dead calm.
Yeah, she's not worried about it at all.
No.
I think she's the only person in the whole movie who knows that they all live in a cartoon world or something. Like,
yeah, I think
nothing
you're right.
Bad can really happen.
She's the only one that's been clued in of the craziness.
Yeah, she's like, we live in a cartoon. Everything will be fine. And they're even... Aren't the cops even opening fire on them?
They are. They
yeah. Yeah, they're
in the middle of this little town. they're opening fire. And at one point during the introduction of Mouth, he's helping his dad with the sink and he's watching some old gangster movie where there's a car chase shootout. He turns off the TV and then thinks that it's still on.
Turn that TV off, son. I can't hear myself think.
Yeah, right, Dad. Huh?
Yeah.
Because there's the chase and the shootout outside his house.
Yeah, and he's like, what the hell? And he bangs on the TV because you still hear the sirens. And also the way they introduced Data, which Data as a kid, he was my favorite character. Because he invents cool stuff. And
invents cool stuff that just doesn't work.
What's so funny about that, as a kid, it didn't register with me that it didn't work. I just thought it was cool how he made these inventions. But really, he's sucks at it, doesn't he?
He's terrible. And at one point, later on in the film, he basically has a nervous breakdown.
Right, right.
About how he can't make anything work right.
But as a kid, when I'm watching it, I'm like, awesome! But as an adult yesterday, I'm like, man, that poor kid just can't
get it. That kid is an idiot.
Yeah, like he makes the cool dart thing on his belt buckle, and it launches at the trash can, and he's pulling it, and then it pulls him into the trash can.
That's powerful.
But do you realize that if you watch that scene again, his invention saved his life. He would have been run over by a car.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it actually pulled him to safety.
Well, there, his stupid inventions that never work save his life
several times
throughout the course of the film.
Yeah, that's great. I still don't know. There's Martha Plimpton's character of Steph. Do you know why she was dunking her head underwater? Was she trying to catch a crab with her teeth? What was going
on? She didn't catch it with her teeth because she pulled it up with her hands, but maybe that's her job, is to retrieve crabs from the barrel?
Yeah, what the hell is she doing in that scene?
I've always wondered that. Like, who is she and why is she doing that?
I guess I need to...
And does she not smell like fish?
Right, she would smell horrible. And I wonder if that's on the Goonies commentary. I watched it a long time ago, and I need to go back and watch it.
Yeah, where they're all now adults and...
See if they mention why the hell she's dunking her head in water, retrieving a crab.
I don't think anyone has a chance to talk over Corey Feldman.
Right. Oh, and then, oh, yeah, you mean on the commentary?
Yeah.
He loves to talk, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's just chattering a mile a minute on that thing.
But, you know, my favorite part is when they introduce Chunk, he immediately shows his physical kind of comedy there.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, he's got the pizza, and he pushes it up on the window, he's got the chocolate shakes.
He can't get close enough.
To
the chase. He's pushing his whole body into the window.
I know. And he squirts the shake all over his face, and he goes, again, this is a kid's movie. He goes,
oh, shit!
Yeah. Again, another very appealing sense to a kid's movie. If you can... And it was really smart that they did this. If you can make a kid feel more adult... They're going to enjoy it that much more. Right. I mean, how many times is there a movie? I remember when I was a little kid, I think it was Pinocchio, where they said jackass when one of them turned into a donkey.
Right.
And I thought that was, like, freaking genius. I was like, oh, I'm watching a kid's movie, and they say ass. So to have kids, like, Chunk going, oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And it's such a great introduction to... such a neurotic mess of a character.
Yeah, he really was. I mean, they had all the fat jokes in there that he loved to eat all the time. He's always hungry. And
he's a slob. I mean, just the way he's pushing the pizza up against the window. And
really, that kid rules in Goonies. He really is.
Oh, he. I mean, other than the Fratellis, he owns the film. And then whenever you put them together...
Right.
It's just beautiful.
It is. And, That opening scene where the Fratellis escape, they escape basically on a beach race.
Like, a well-timed beach all-terrain vehicle race.
Yeah, Mama Fratelli, she had it all worked out the whole time.
And you know what? You're right. That's why she was so calm.
Yeah, she knew,
exactly what she was doing and where she was going.
And then we established
Francis and Jake fight.
The Fratellis, they're like cartoon bad guys, but they are deadly also, which is kind of weird.
They're monsters.
Yeah. And That's what I think is weird. Like, the concept that they escaped jail, but they're still there in town, and the town's not that big. You would think the cops would be out looking for them or something, you know?
Yeah, it's very Keystone Cops-ish in the chase, especially the way the cops put the entire town in danger.
Yeah, just opening fire, you know, they're afraid of fire. I could easily jump over that gasoline fire.
Or I mean, what's going to happen if you run through a gasoline fire? Nothing.
Yeah, just jump over it. I mean, come on. So the movie introduces, we've got Mikey and Brand. And they're
yes.
all bummed out. And one thing, can I just call attention to the fact that Mikey has asthma?
Yes. Serious asthma, apparently.
He uses his inhaler I don't know how many times. I wanted to count, but I lost count. I've known several people with asthma in my life. My wife has asthma. If they use the inhaler, they use it once a day.
Yeah. Well, if you use it more than once, it somehow... You create a dependence, or your lung gets dilated too much or something. I don't know the medical science of it, but it's dangerous to use it more than once.
Right, but I think Mikey, he has heroin in his. Because he hits that thing, I'm going to say, at least 10 times in the movie.
Kind of like Clarence Boniker's little Coke thing.
Yeah.
That he sticks up his nose and snorts throughout the film.
And there's several movies that I can think. I can't name any right now, but I've seen where people have movie asthma, where they keep inhaling from the inhaler.
Sure, like at intense moments.
Right, right. They do that. It's kind of like their hit or whatever. And it always drives my wife, Heather, crazy because, you know, she has asthma. She was like, you don't use it like that. You don't use it in moments of stress like that. You use it when you're
out of breath. I haven't seen that cliche used in a long time, but in the 80s,
yeah, they always
it was pretty prevalent.
I'm trying to think of a movie that I remember. There's one movie with David Duchovny called Playing God, and I believe that one of the I remember now. The FBI agent who's in that, he uses his inhaler multiple times in the movie.
Okay.
He's taking hits off his inhaler. But I'm going to one day look up asthma inhalers in movies and see how often. But they always use it like it's a cigarette or something, like something you take a hit off of.
Something to give like a sense of relief.
Yeah. So we've determined that Mikey, he's kind of a sad, scared little kid who's always taking hits off his albuterol and his... One thing I noticed,
that's good albuterol.
They establish it really early that Brand likes to correct people. Because Mikey, he's a dumbass and he can't say anything right. And so he's always mispronouncing words and Brand is correcting him.
I was just trying to delete myself. No. You know, dictate myself.
That's delude yourself, dummy.
That's what I said.
And even later, the mom mispronounces
yes.
something. And Brand goes, Mom, and he corrects her. Someone needs to slap Brand around, don't they?
Well, I don't know. See, I kind of felt bad for Brand. I felt like, you know, he works his ass off, obviously, to look his best.
Right.
And appear as cool as he possibly can in a bad situation.
Right.
You know, he likes the hot cheerleader. His family's kind of poor. He doesn't have a car. He has a bicycle.
Everyone else seems really rich.
Yeah, he's kind of just like making the best of a bad situation, and he's surrounded by a father with his head in his in the clouds.
Right.
A mother who probably is more than just a little bit stupid.
She somehow broke her arm doing something.
Yes, she broke her arm doing something and she can't pronounce anything right.
He takes one step outside and you are in deep, absolutely the deepest...
Shit, Ma.
I don't like that language.
Right, neither can Mikey. So,
and Mikey's the same way. So I honestly felt bad for him.
It's safe to say that their dad is also a huge nerd, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's a museum nerd.
So, he's a museum curator of a museum in Astoria, Oregon.
Right.
And where apparently there are houses yet no one lives.
Yeah.
And there's like no one on the street. It's just gloomy, rainy constantly.
And they established that Brand also worked forever mowing lawns, I think.
Mowed lawns all summer to get his bicycle.
Yeah. So we know.
And his tires apparently don't have... proper.
I still don't understand that scene, but we'll get to that when. Because Mouth shows up.
Yes.
And I don't know why anyone is friends with Mouth, because he's the most annoying kid ever, isn't he?
He's an asshole.
He's like, hey, Mikey.
Ah, oh, it's Mouth.
Hey, Mikey.
Yo, Mikey.
And he's annoying.
Yeah.
And he gives Brand a hard time for failing his driving test. I don't even know why Brand puts up with him. He's an older kid, you know?
Come on, what's the matter? What is this, a nuclear Saturday or something? Come on, guys. It's our last weekend together. Last Goonie weekend. We gotta be going out in style. Cruising the coast. Sniffing some lace. Down in the bruise. But no! The one older brother had to go and screw it up.
And then we have the introduction of Chunk. Chunk shows up.
As in the jerk alert.
Yeah, jerk alert. You got to do the truffle shuffle. Now, we have the famous truffle shuffle. And one thing I notice now is Brand and Mikey are not into the truffle shuffle.
I just saw the most amazing thing of my entire life. First, you got to do the truffle shuffle. Come on. Do it. Come on. Do it.
Maybe at one time when they were younger it was funny, but they're kind of sickened by it.
Mouth continues to enjoy humiliating Chunk.
Right.
And they've kind of grown out of humiliation. But Mouth is the continuous... I think just to make himself feel better. He's got issues. He's got to go to a shrink.
He's always combing his hair.
Yes.
And does he have parachute pants on, or he's got a members only jacket?
He's got a members only jacket.
Awesome. And Chunk shows up. He's got exciting news. So we get to see our first Rube Goldberg type.
Yes.
And as a kid, you love that stuff, don't you?
Absolutely.
The bowling ball rolling, and then the balloon pops, and the chicken lays an egg, which I always thought was funny. Like, I didn't know you could get a chicken to lay an egg by scaring
it. How many times a day can they open that gate?
I know. And then it just goes, it's just this real, you know...
It replaces the balloon.
Yeah, I know. And it's so intricate, and then all it does is go, and opens the gate. But I guess Rube Goldberg's, his drawings were like that, where it was like always do something simple, something real elaborate. So that was cool. It was kind of foreshadowing, I guess. If Mikey designed this, that him and a certain pirate kind of have a talent. They share the same talent.
There you go.
Which is making contraptions, I guess. Which still, you know, later on in the movie... suspension of disbelief sometimes. It's like, how would you make this?
Well, again, this is a children's film.
Right, yes. Just go along with it, Jason.
And now that I'm, you know, I see all these little things as an adult now. You know, I loved the film as a kid, and I still have a certain nostalgic love for it. I can still watch it and enjoy it. But yeah, now you kind of question some of the choices.
So when Chunk shows up, you know, he's telling them all about the car chase. And, of course, nobody listens to Chunk at all. That's the main thing of the
movie. Well, because Chunk creates stories. He's the town liar.
Yeah, Michael Jackson used the bathroom in his house.
Listen, okay? You guys will never believe me. There's two cop cars, okay? And they're chasing this four-wheel deal with this real neat ORV. And there are both flying all over the place. It's the most amazing thing I ever saw.
More amazing than the time Michael Jackson came over to your house to use the bathroom.
More amazing than the time you saved those old people from that nursing home fire, right?
Yeah, and I bet it was even more amazing than the time you ate your weight in Godfather's pizza, right?
Okay, Brand. Michael Jackson didn't come over to my house to use the bathroom. But his sister did.
But his sister did. That's my favorite part. He goes, what? And Michael Jackson used the bathroom, right? And he's like, no, but his sister did.
Yeah, he later recants on his lie, but then he can't go all the way. But
no.
So I guess Janet or LaToya used his bathroom. But then, you know, we have the introduction of Data, who uses a zip line.
With the 007 music playing.
He lives only a few feet away. And I like when the mom shows up after he's destroyed the screen and the screen door. She goes, I can see Data's been here. So you're telling me this little kid has destroyed their screen door several times?
Yeah, well, they even say, screen door, screen door.
Yeah, so he's done that.
He just times. Doesn't care. He's Data. He's got to use his experiments. And I love that there's a zip line hooked up to the homes.
So
that's
his all the time.
Chosen method of arrival.
Yeah, and Data's cool. He's got the high tops and the trench coat. So, as a
the earliest member of the trench coat mafia.
Yeah. And remember, this is when they introduce Rosalita, who's helping the mom who has an unexplained broken arm. And this scene is so awkward when she asks Mouth to translate, or he goes, I speak fluent Spanish.
Oh, but hold on. You're missing the best part of the entire Data scene. And that's as he crashes through, they knock Mikey's mom's most favorite statue.
Yes.
And Chunk picks it up, and they're like, okay, just put it down. And then, of course, he drops it and breaks.
I bet you guys thought I was going to drop it, huh? I know you would think that from good old Chunk.
You idiot!
Oh, look, it's not broken. It's perfect, huh?
Oh, my God!
What?
That's my mom's most favorite piece!
What? Oh, my God!
The penis of Adam.
Yes. And
then, of course, Mouth pipes in with the Groucho Marx line.
It wouldn't be here if it wasn't.
Shut up, Mouth.
And I never understood it until I was an adult, and then I laugh my ass off every time he does it.
Right. One thing I noticed about the scene now when I watch it is there's a really huge close-up of it.
Oh, yeah.
The penis.
I mean, that
balls,
sucker,
you know?
Fills the screen. It's like, here's the penis.
Again, kids movie Richard Donner, and you're zooming in on a statue of a ball sack, you know?
Richard Donner was obviously well in over his head, mm-hmm. because there's been multiple times, especially in the making of, where he talked about how, you know, the kids themselves are wonderful kids, but get them together,
right?
And he's just in hell.
It almost seems like the movie is cut whenever the kids are doing this stuff, where I don't get an idea of what the hell's going on, you know?
Yeah, it's a chaotic.
It's chaotic. They're trying to fix the penis by gluing it. I don't even know when it happens, because they blame Chunk for gluing it upside down, but they never really show him doing it or even near it, really.
And what I don't understand is how it was glued upside down.
Yeah.
You know, if it was a clean break, you know.
It's just a joke.
God meant to do it that way, you'd all be pissing in your faces.
Looks fine to me.
Pissing in our faces, yes. Yeah. While that's happening, you know, Mouth is showing Rosalita and talking about this is where you put the heroin, this is where you put the cocaine and the marijuana.
Yes. Separate the drugs.
Right. Separate the drugs. This is where we'll keep you if you're bad. Like
that was the attic for Mr. Walsh's sex toys.
Right. His sex toys attic. And then this is where we'll lock you up.
Yes, and if you misbehave, you go in the closet with the cockroaches for 2 weeks without food and water.
And I was thinking, like, as I was watching this, like, what is the point? You know, why did they do this? But it's to establish that Mouth is the translator for later on when they get the map, he can read everything.
And that he's just a massive dick.
Yeah. And he goes, says some, what does he say? Like,
Adios,
señorita. Yeah.
A smile.
Kind of like a taunting, almost overtly scary sexual.
So isn't he kind of a creepy kid, David?
He's a very creepy kid.
What's weird now watching the movie is how out of nowhere Mouth says,
what's your dad going to do with all that stuff that's in the attic?
He's going to give it back to the museum. Or whoever they picked to be the new assistant Curly. Or Curry.
Hey, wait a minute, guys. Maybe there's some stuff up there for us. Maybe there's some stuff that we can keep from the outsiders.
Lots of
maybe
food.
There's some rich stuff.
No,
rich stuff.
No,
you guys, let me see. Oh, my God. You guys, listen to me, damn it. That's his stuff.
Or yeah.
He just kind of says it out of nowhere, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, because Steven Spielberg had an inkling of a story, and then they gave it to Christopher Columbus to just try to figure out.
There's not really a well-establishing moment of why they should even
yeah,
embark on this adventure. So they go up in the attic, and at first Bran's like, you know, hey, that's my dad's stuff. And he goes up there with them, and he doesn't really stop them. And he starts looking too.
Which is kind of a continuous theme in the movie, that Bran is supposedly the guy that keeps them all in check, but for some reason he just goes along with it anyways.
Yeah. And they also establish here that they get Chunk to hold anything if they want him to break something.
Yeah.
Or you taunt him somehow to get him to open something. So you just basically trick Chunk into doing things.
Chunk is an idiot.
Yeah, he is.
He's quick to anger. Quick to anger and hunger.
So basically they go up into the attic for no reason whatsoever. And Mikey starts telling him about this great treasure. And by the way, isn't One-Eyed Willie just a dick joke?
That's what I always thought.
One-Eyed Willie?
Like,
it means a dick, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
These kids are talking about a dick. It's a dick joke. And they keep saying it over and over again.
That's why I thought it was so funny as a kid. Like, who is One-Eyed Willie?
Right. So they establish this whole thing about a map and a coin and... you know, Mikey, he's talking about it as there's thunder striking, and it's like this scene where you're like, oh, that sounds really like a really cool story about
super one. Moody.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. All of a sudden from the 30 seconds it took them to get from the living room to the attic, it turns from like day to night in a thunderstorm.
We're in a different movie. It's like pouring rain. It's all this atmosphere and about One-Eyed Willie. He stole all this money and jewels and they chased him and then
his ship got trapped.
Yeah, and then he
killed all of his shipmates.
Okay, and then they established that he was sealed up and he lived for a long time. But how did this news get out? Oh, and by the way, there was Chester Copperpot. He went looking for it. And, you know, Bran's like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. And, you know, this is all just a fool's dream. None of it exists. So it seems like they drop it. It's all dropped, and they go out of the attic. And then, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, they're going to sneak off and go look for the treasure. It's like they were completely disinterested in it, and they weren't going to do anything. And then, all of a sudden, they are. Didn't it seem like there's a scene that isn't in the movie where they decide to go look for the treasure?
Well, I think, again, it's not that well put together, but I think the scene is because while they're after the story, that Troy's dad shows up with the paperwork for the foreclosure.
Right.
And he kind of gets kind of sad.
And they're douchey. They're kind of looking around like, oh, we're going to do this.
Yeah,
over
this
here.
Is what we're going to do here and here. But again, after that, there's no verbal communication that, hey, let's use Bran's slinky stretcher thing and tie him to his chair and then leave.
Yeah, it just all kind of happens.
Why wouldn't they just get up and leave?
Yeah, hey, we're going to go.
Hey, we're going to go, so yeah.
Yeah, it's like mom, for some reason, told him, watch your brother, don't let him go anywhere or something.
Yeah. Because he has asthma.
Because
he's
later
he's not allowed to go outside.
Oh, yeah. You know, do it for the 10th time. And, by the way, later on when he sees his dad just goes, oh, hey, Mikey. He doesn't like, he's not like, you're supposed to be at home. Where's your brother? Or anything like that. So he's got his own shit he's dealing with. But by the way, wouldn't that suck if somebody bought out your entire town and all your friends had to move away? So I could identify with that. That kind of
sucks. Oh, absolutely. But I don't, always kind of, now that I'm an adult and I think about it, why are all these homes in foreclosure?
Right, are they
like,
all
How did broke? They get to that point?
I know.
What is the town so bad off?
I know, and it looks like a great
corporation
town.
Moves
it
doesn't
in? Look dilapidated by any means.
Yeah, I just didn't quite understand where that came from.
The only place that looks dilapidated is the restaurant that they find, you know?
Yeah, the summer place.
So they're riding around like goofballs playing the Cyndi Lauper song, you know, the Good Enough song. And by the way, you know, I like kind of looked up the lyrics on that song. I don't understand a word of that. You know, sometimes
really?
You can interpret a song, can't you?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of interpret it as, you know, the chorus makes no sense.
About the superstitions?
Well, all that is kind of relates to the idea of well, I guess not. Superstitions. I mean, I know, like, the lines about the dreams and making dreams real. And
well, it's basically about trying something and maybe you shouldn't just keep doing what we're doing or something.
Yeah, I think it's... No, I think it's more about, you know, exceeding expectations and not giving in to the status quo.
Okay. I just got confused by all the wrestlers in there.
Yeah, that music video, what always confused me about the music video is that it's two parts, but it's the same song.
Right.
So in part two, it's just the song over again from the beginning.
And I believe that video is directed by Spielberg.
Really?
I believe I read that.
Well, that thing is a mess.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense.
Let's put Roddy Piper and Lou Albano in it.
Iron Sheik.
Wow.
I mean, they're all in there. Every wrestler from the 80s.
You know, when I was a kid, I liked that song, too. I was, like, into it.
I still like the song. It's still kind of... I mean, it triggers that part in my mind. It just the beat itself. That dun 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 dun.
They're watching the video at Mikey's house.
Yeah, appropriately.
Yeah. So as they're riding in, you know, they find that, you know, he's got the doubloon where you look through it and you see the rest
of the rocks in the lighthouse.
Right. And by the way, they're all just kind of talking and yelling and stuff. And as a kid, I followed it better, I think. But I was just like, man. And you got the fat kid talking about how he's hungry. Right. And the rest of them saying, shut up. And here's where we established the... weren't those the same guys who visited Mikey's house that go to that restaurant? I swear it is the same guys, but maybe it's not.
No, it's not, because it's Troy's dad and one of his partners that visits Mikey's house.
So it's actually FBI agents or something.
Yeah.
Then they say
yeah.
He's a Fed. So basically, when the kids are outside the restaurant and they hear gunshots...
Gunshots. Not the big ones that you hear in war movies, but gunshots. Real ones. They're going to kill us.
Jeez, Chuck, turn off your brain, right? Somebody probably dropped the pot.
Yeah, we
just dropped the pot. Are you sure, Mikey?
The Fratellis have just murdered two people.
Yes, they've just murdered two federal officers.
And what drives you nuts about this is Chunk is telling them, don't go in there. Something bad is happening. You know, something. And they're like, oh, shut up, Chunk. And he even sees the bullet holes in the ORV.
ORV bullet holes.
Yeah, which I, for the longest time, I didn't know what an ORV meant.
Yeah, I'd never heard the term before until the movie.
So it's SUV, I guess. I mean, we've heard of that.
Yeah, we've heard of SUV, ATV, not ORV.
Yeah. While they're trying to get in this restaurant and Chunk's trying to stop them, they have the scene where, you know, they've tied Brand around the chair. And then eventually he gets away somehow. They show that the mom, oblivious to it, and just goes, oh, Bran, and walks away. He's like, Mom!
Again, she uses some word completely and totally wrong.
Uh-huh.
She won't let him go. And then he's pleading with Rosalita, and Rosalita just wants nothing to do with it.
She's freaked out. Some kind of weird sex thing, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
And by the way, what we were talking about earlier is Mouth removes the...
The caps
off of Brand's tires. Just unscrews them. That's it. And
yeah.
They go like what? That doesn't happen. If you
no, everyone
cap.
Knows there's that little stem.
It. Yeah, you push it in and it goes. But he like just apparently he doesn't have stems in his. I guess
those are they're special tires, or maybe they're tires for poor people.
But you have to have that moment to have the comedic moment where. He takes the little girl's pink bike.
Brandon, don't you come home without your brother, or I'll come in Hare Krishna.
That's Harry Carey, Ma.
That's exactly what I said.
What? My new tires. They popped my new tires, Mr. Brother. I'm going to...
My bike!
I owe you one.
I want my bike!
Yeah, I want my bike!
Like, who? What producer's kid is that?
Yeah, is that date his real-life sister or something?
So, yeah.
So, here's the part that we've introduced Troy, and Andy and Steph, right? And they're riding in this car with Troy, who's a douchebag.
Troy! You touch that mirror again, I swear to God I'm going to smack you in the face.
And Troy's two-tone Trans Am or whatever the hell it is.
Later on, Andy kept saying, she said something like, he kept moving his mirror so he could look down my shirt. But actually, that's not what he's looking at, Andy. He was trying to look up your skirt like a perv. Yeah. And she says, look down my shirt. But I think it's worse. He's trying to look up her skirt with his
mirror. Yeah, that's a little more, that's a little more gross.
Yeah. And what's even creepier, Steph thinks it's hilarious.
Steph's a big fan of, like, date rape.
Right. Shouldn't she be disturbed by this? And think
should she not be defending her friend?
Okay, this whole scene bothers me. They see Bran, he's riding the bike, and the guy, they're like, oh my God, what's Bran doing? And he's like, oh, hey, how's it going? Or whatever. He's embarrassed, but he keeps trying to ride. He keeps trying to ride along on the little bike, and Troy's
he's trying to hold his dignity intact.
Right. And Troy's like, hey, I'll give you a ride. And he grabs his arm and floors it.
Yeah, Walsh. Let us give you a little ride. Hold on. Here we go.
Oh, my God. Go on. So go on.
Careening over a cliff.
Yeah, at 50 miles an hour.
So basically, Troy just tried to kill this guy.
Yes.
He's a murderer.
He's a psychopath.
Right. And later on when we see Brand, the bike is wrecked or whatever, but he basically could have easily been impaled on a branch and, you know, has a lung that's
a collapsed lung, punctured, broken ribs.
A leg broken in three places.
Yeah. How he got free of that, he must have just fell right into like a big pile of leaves.
Yeah, luckily he's in a cartoon, so he was okay.
Yeah.
But when I watched that scene, I'm like, what an asshole. He could have killed that guy. And Andy and Steph didn't seem concerned enough to make him stop to check on him. They just went ahead and went to their destination.
Troy doesn't listen to anyone.
Man, what a bunch of jerks.
His dad owns that town.
But you know what? When they finally introduce the...
Also notice that there's no one on the road except them.
Right, right. They exist in this kind of weird... Astoria, where everyone else has left, I guess.
Already. Yeah. In Astoria where no one is out except the Goonies.
So when the kids get in the restaurant, you know, Ma Fratelli is there. And she has this great line about, we only serve tongue. Yeah. That was great.
What do you want?
Lots of water.
For what? Is that all?
Yes. No. I want the Villa Scalapine. I want a fettuccine Alfredo. A bottle of fettuccine in 1981.
The only thing we serve is tongue. You boys like tongue?
Do you boys like tongue?
Yeah. And she's like, sit down and get some four waters. And they're all brown. All four waters are brown. What's wrong with it? She seems like, even though she knows it's all crap and it's a dilapidated restaurant, she's insulted by any comments they make.
Yeah. Well, it's wet, isn't it?
Yeah, so gross.
I always wondered what it was. I thought maybe it was booze.
Hell, she got him beer or something.
Well, yeah, well, I thought maybe she got him like some like wild turkey or something.
Right.
I had no idea. I suppose, you know, it's probably just dirty water from a dilapidated, you know, water system. But I always wondered what the hell. Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around that water would be that brown.
And, you know, the scenes where Mikey goes down, he's pretending to use the restroom, and they establish that there's some kind of creature in the other room. That's well directed. Richard Donner did a great job of making that scary.
Like, well, do you want to know why that's well directed?
Why?
Because it was most likely directed by Steven Spielberg.
That scene, you think?
Yeah. There's, in fact, there's in Sean Astin has a, I guess, would you call an autobiography, kind of a memoir? Uh-huh. And he talks about how The Goonies was a 50-50 thing. Where Steven Spielberg was always there.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
Yeah, and he directed like at least 50% of the film.
So certain sequences he did, and he probably did that one?
Yeah. I mean, because Richard Donner didn't know how to... I mean, what had Richard Donner done before that?
Oh, he'd done a lot of stuff.
I know, but in like an adventure, kids, working with kids kind of thing.
Right. I mean, it was probably like a really busy production. Maybe he had to share in the work.
I know a ton of the behind-the-scenes footage has Steven Spielberg on set.
Right.
So he's there most of the time. And I have a feeling that was a scene that because it has that touch.
It has that cool, like, kind of, it's kind of frightening.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, what the hell is that? And he's throwing food at it, and they establish it's his brother or something. It's some kind of...
Yeah, and once you figure out that it's a person, it's heartbreaking.
Right. This strange, like, deformed person. Which is really kind of unstable, too, when you think about this kid's movie. There's, like, this deformed guy who's chained up.
This family has someone chained in the basement.
Right, which is kind of sad, right? And then,
and did they always run the restaurant? Was that always down there?
The Fratelli's Pizza or something? And,
yeah.
And then Mikey, he's, like, freaked out by him. He goes running out, and all of a sudden, Bran's there, and he's like, hey, come here, Mikey. And he grabs him, and then Ma Fratelli's like, ah, you kids, get out of here. Like, the whole ruse is up. She's not running a restaurant. Just get the hell out of here. You know, it's like the scene over. Here's how we're going to end the scene. Everyone's just going to get thrown out. And then she delivers the best line ever, which is, do you remember what it is?
Kids suck.
Yeah, kids suck. There's like this long pause, too, in a close-up of her. And she goes,
kids suck.
You could tell she hated her kids, too.
Yeah, she's just completely, totally unsympathetic. Her children are constantly bickering. There's this violent sibling rivalry that's apparent between the two brothers, and who the hell knows what happened with poor Sloth.
And meanwhile, Chunk has tried to tell him that it's the Fratellis. Here's the ORV. It's got bullet holes. They don't notice. Even when they show the Fratellis walking out, carrying something over the shoulder.
An obvious body in a garbage bag.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, they're throwing away... What does Data say? Like, restaurant trash or something like that.
Yeah.
Ah, it's just restaurant trash.
Because they've been doing a lot of cooking in there.
Right. And so somehow, you know, Bran's like, we gotta go home, guys. We gotta go home. And as soon as they leave, Mikey's like, I gotta go investigate. And so that they go back, and for some reason, Bran goes with them.
Of course Bran goes. Bran has to go with him.
And then they establish also he's ready to make them go home, but Andy is like, gets scared by a fish on a rake or something, and she runs to his arms. And he's like, okay, well, maybe I'll stick it out for a bit. Right? Oh, and by the
way... This isn't so bad.
They get into the restaurant by tricking, like,
Chunk.
Yeah, Mouth starts talking about Chunk's mom, and he's like...
He's got naked pictures of his mom.
And he's like...
Hey, wait a minute, Chunk. You know, I got some naked pictures of your mom. Taking a bath? You want to buy them?
What?
Real cheap.
Chunk.
And then, you know, he runs through the door. So, Chunk...
Thanks, Chunk.
And so you have the whole scene in the restaurant that builds up where... The one part I always laugh at, because, like, how dumb is Dato? He's like, $50 bill, $50 bill.
Yes. They discover a printing press.
It's like,
$50 bill, $50 bill, $50 bill, $50 bill, $50 bill.
We're rich, we're rich. He's like, no, this is counterfeit. And even Andy knows that that's a federal crime. Like,
25 years for counterfeiting.
She's the smart one in the group, isn't she? I guess. I don't know. $50 bill.
Yeah. I like how she knows how long the jail sentence is for counterfeiting.
Right. And the whole time, Mikey knows that they need to break through the floor. He's like a man possessed, a kid possessed. He knows what he wants. He's not explaining it to anybody.
He doesn't want to leave the Goondocks.
And he's banging on the floor. And they... you know, a Chunk, he knocks the water over and they find a passageway underground. And it is hilarious when Chunk smells ice cream. He's like, I smell ice cream. And he opens it up. But I love that shot outside the, from inside the freezer. They just show the square window and you see his head like jump up trying to look in.
Yes.
That cracks me up. And there's all these flavors. What is it? Swenson's. And they got this and this and this. And everyone's just staring.
Butter pecan.
And there's the dead body in there. That whole sequence is well done. Like,
it's really well done. And I always like how they push the body back in the freezer whenever they hear the Vitellis return, and they just leave Chunk in there.
First, the body falls on them, like it kind of creeps forward on Chunk, and then later on, they push it in there with Chunk, and he's like, guys, guys! When is Chunk going to figure out they don't really give a shit about him?
Yeah, Chunk's a non-entity for them.
Right, and even then, they don't say, you know, the Vitellis come back, and they're arguing over pizza or whatever, and they're hiding in the fireplace, and they don't say, Chunk, come on, come with us. They're like, go get the police.
Yeah.
Go ahead, get out of here. And then, you know, you see the window thing fall down, and they go, yeah, yeah, use that window. It's like they're improvising the whole scene is what it feels like to me. Yeah, window, go out the window.
Hey, but luckily he fit. He fit through the window. Yeah. And he likes the dark, and he hates nature.
That's right. And that is one of the best scenes also, where Chunk is out on the street, and he, oh, thank God you stopped, because I ran into these horrible people.
These disgusting people, the Vitellis.
The Vitellis. I think they killed somebody, and I know where they're hiding. I know exactly where their hideout is. I can tell you.
What seems to be the problem?
Look, mister, I need a ride. My friends and I just had a run-in with these really disgusting people. You might have heard of them, the Vitellis. Well, we found their hideout. And could you please, please take me to the sheriff's station? I can describe all three of them.
Bimba dagli occhi vieni da Mario.
And then the light comes on and he starts singing that opera or whatever. Whole scene is great.
And then the best thing is he starts singing the opera and Chunk starts praying in Hebrew.
Right?
He starts going, Baruch Adonai.
That is great. And Joey Pants grabs him and trying to stuff him in the back. And he makes those great faces where he's like, ah! And then he looks down and he's right next to the same dead body again.
Yeah, you can't get away from it.
All those Chunk scenes are hilarious. They work. I mean, when they're down in exploring and stuff now, I mean, really it is a lot of racket of everyone yelling and stuff.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out what the hell's going on. As a kid, I followed it perfectly. Now I'm just like, oh, man.
Well, and next is the scene that I always thought was hilarious and wonderful as a kid. And now, as an adult, I'm just like, what the hell? And it's, they're going through, and they come into this area, and it's just pipes upon pipes upon pipes.
Right.
And apparently, Astoria has the worst plumbing in the world.
The thing that always confused me about that scene is when everything starts going crazy, I never understood why.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently because if you bang on pipes, as Mouth says,
pressure!
Let's get out of here! Like now!
Because remember what they did, they established earlier that his dad was working on a sink.
Ah, yes.
When Mouth had the TV up way too loud, and he's like, son, turn that down. He's working on a sink. So Mouth, this day earlier, probably learned all about reverse pressure.
Exactly.
Uh-huh, man, that's great screenwriting there, Bill.
It really is. It just it fits together wonderfully. And there's the scene where Troy sits down on the toilet with his guns and ammo. And,
yeah. Daddy!
Well, you know, as a kid, I never noticed it, but now as an adult, you can see the lift.
Yeah.
It's like not even well concealed.
Right.
But yeah,
that's like a kind of like a nice quick montage of things going crazy. My favorite is when the guy gets hit in the face with the the water thing.
Yeah, he gets knocked out.
Yeah.
He's trying to get a drink of water, and he's following it up and down, and then boom, it gets blasted back into the fence.
And the creepy bunch of old guys taking a shower at the country club.
Yeah, and one guy has an eye patch.
Yeah, what is that about?
I was like, wow.
When I watched that scene, I'm like, is that some kind of like inside joke we don't know about? Why does he have an eye patch? I don't know.
Maybe he's related to One-Eye Willie.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Another dick joke. Aha! That's what it is.
And they're naked in the shower.
Those guys are a bunch of One-Eye Willies, I guess.
As a kid, I was always, you know, I would go to the YMCA with my cousin and uncle, and I was always very creeped out by the old men in the shower that they would just go in naked and shower. Like, are you? I don't know if it's
there's something about adult nudity that's really creepy.
Yeah, and then to have it in a kid's movie
at a public place too,
even implied public adult nudity.
But it's like we'll show them. We'll steal all of their knobs to the.
Yes, for some reason. You bang on all these pipes, it destroys the plumbing system of Astoria.
And it sucks them into the wall.
Yes. So does the water company not know this chamber exists?
Right. I do like later on when they show Sloth push it up through the... You know, he just pops up.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like, whatever he did, he caused a real mess up there.
He did. He probably drove a fire hydrant out of the ground. And
there's some dead people up there.
Someone dies.
Yeah.
So there's multiple fatalities.
So we've got the whole scene where they find Chester Copperpot.
Yeah. The reverse pressure conveniently blows open a new doorway to escape through.
Right. And I guess One-Eyed Willie figured that out? No. Maybe it's not one of his traps.
Yeah, maybe not.
When did the bats happen? Those happen after the...
That happens just after.
The Chester Copper Pots.
Because now that they escape, it goes back to Chunk, and he's being interrogated by the Fratellis.
Which is, I think, one of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah. And Francis tells him to tell them everything. He's like, everything?
Yeah, tell me everything, kid.
So he's...
Okay, I'll talk.
He starts, I think, at 5 years old.
Right.
And my favorite one is, and I knock my sister down the stairs and blame the dog.
Yeah. And was that he threw up over a balcony and everyone started puking?
Yeah, he takes a fake vomit to the movie theater.
And then I dumped it over the side on all the people in the audience. Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other. I never felt so bad in my entire life.
Mom, they're going to like this kid, Mom.
Hit puree!
No! I'm too young! Play the violin.
The Jake Fratelli, Robert Davi behind him, just patting him on the shoulder and smiling.
He's like, I'm beginning to like this kid.
Yeah.
Because really, when you think about it, Chunk sounds like a horrible person.
Yeah, Chunk is a crazy little sociopath. Yeah. Well, it just lies up a storm and wants to create chaos.
And I love it. He's like, I'm beginning to like this kid. And also, you know, it's scary how Mama Fratelli drops the tomato in the blender. She's like...
Visceral image, and especially to watch it as a kid, because as the tomato hits, you can picture in your mind the hand going into the blender.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy. And you know, they've already established that they shot two people in the head, so they're capable of anything, the Fratellis.
I wouldn't put it past them.
They scare the shit out of me, you know?
They're monsters.
So then, you know, they don't believe. What's funny is they go, give it up, kid. Where are your friends? They're down in the fireplace. They're looking for a treasure. And he tells them the truth the first thing. He doesn't try to withhold any kind of information whatsoever. It's really funny. So when they get through the cool booby traps. By the way, why does Data think that those obvious... sticks of dynamite.
Sticks that say dynamite on them?
Yeah. Oh, look, candles. Okay.
They're wrapped in paper.
Yeah, they're dynamite.
And they have fuses.
And, you know, they get through all that, the rocks dropping and everything. And there's a, you know, One-Eyed Willie. Can you see him running those chains and hoisting those giant rocks up?
Maybe he had his men do it, and then once they did it, he killed them.
Yeah, he had to have set up the traps before he killed them. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
It had to have been.
That's the way it works.
Because you got to have them go through elaborate traps and the bat scene. Bat scenes in movies are always good, but the best part about that is when, I think, is it Steph who's yelling?
Yeah,
that is pretty funny. I always laugh at that. Rabies, rabies.
Well, and I also like that, I don't know, again, whose choice it was, but they use the obvious fake bats, but they're the bats that are from, like, the movies from the 40s.
Right.
Like, they're like hairy balls with wings attached to them.
And they do a couple of those quick shots of the one hovering right in front of the face, kind of.
Like, yeah. Ah! Yeah, it's like they wanted to pay an homage to the goofiness of the horror films from the, you know, like the early days.
And they had to have the bats fly up through the fireplace so then the Fratellis know, hey, it's true.
And those suckers come through with some force.
Yeah, they blow the top of the fireplace off even before they arrive.
Yeah. So it's a shockwave, like, sound wave.
And they're like, oh, okay, we're going to go down there. Well, let's put Chunk with Sloth.
Hi, sir. My name's Lawrence. So sometimes people call me Chunk.
And all those scenes are gold, too, where he's like, hey, would you like a Baby Ruth? And he throws it at his head.
He hits him in the head.
He's like,
look, I got a Baby Ruth, sir.
Uh-huh. I understand. And now, the final product of this game.
Baby?
Take a bite. A spoon of coke.
I'm going to throw it to you, okay?
Put it in a...
And, of course, later on, we have the best line ever when he's in the freezer and he gets the ice cream.
Rocky Road?
Rocky Road?
Yeah, that's gold. And, then you know, they establish an immediate rapport, Chunk and Sloth. And all those.
Well, I love how Sloth is frightening. I mean, come on. He's.
Yeah.
He's got a cone head. His one ear's lower than the other, and one of them wiggles. and he's got like jagged teeth, and just everything about the creature design on him was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
And the way he scares the shit out of him, and the instant connection they make is over food,
right over the rocky road, and it's really just creepy how. Sloth is feeding him with his fingers, like.
Yeah, and then Chunk starts feeding Sloth.
Yeah, it's.
That's the connection, a friends for life, right there.
We're sharing a candy bar. We're best buds. There's something just creepy about that scene. I think.
But I just love that Sloth feeds him. Like, it's not. Mm-hmm. It shows the humanity that this inhuman creature has to, you know. Initially just start feeding him. Instead of eating it for himself, he starts feeding Chunk. Because Chunk needs it.
Yes, he does. And then, you know, they share ice cream. And that's the great scene where he calls the police. And the guy's like, is this Lawrence? Isn't that Chunk's name?
I think like, so, yeah.
And he's like...
Just like that last prank about all those little creatures that multiply when you throw water on them.
That's the
aliens
gremlins.
Were invading...
Yeah, all these funny little things there. So he doesn't believe him. But when they... You know the scene where they find the wishing well and all the quarters and stuff?
Yeah, the like, Moss Garden wishing well.
Guys, we're rich. Even when I was a little kid, when... I can't remember. Is it... Who says...
Stop, stop. You what? Can't do this.
Why?
Why? Because these are somebody else's wishes. They're somebody else's dreams.
Yeah. But you know what? This one. This one right here. This was my dream, my wish. And it didn't come true. So I'm taking it back. I'm taking them all back.
That's Steph.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, shut up.
Yeah, and Mouth says, I'm taking them all back.
And, you know, there's one scene where he goes, hey, it's Martin Sheen. And they're like, Martin Sheen, that's John F. Kennedy.
Martin Sheen,
that's President Kennedy, you idiot.
Was that different? I mean, he played Kennedy once.
Oh, that's really smart. I'm glad to know you're using your brain.
Yeah, well, at least I have a brain.
So stupid, Mouth.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Shut up.
That is a way dated joke.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Whenever Martin Sheen played John F. Kennedy, it must have been sometime right that year or something.
Well, also, when you think of that, that would be a half dollar. And when was the last time you saw a half dollar?
Somebody threw that in a wishing well?
Yeah, who the hell's throwing a half dollar in a wishing well? When I got those as a kid, I held on to them. That was big money.
But you know that whole scene where Troy is hanging out by a well with his buddies? What?
Well, that's the place to hang out.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Troy, how far you got with Andy?
All the way, buddy.
You guys are so immature. Why don't you grow up?
Come on, tell us.
Really? I put it this way. I didn't make it with her yet. And I stress yet.
Hey, have you made it with Andy yet? Not yet, but I'm thinking we are. I'm going to make a wish. And he throws a quarter in. It flies back out. But I love the whole part where, you know, they're talking about being a Goonie. And Goonies never say die. And basically they're talking Andy into staying. I don't know why they want Andy to stay with them, but, you know, like, guys, we can't just leave now. We got to save, you know, our town.
Yeah, we're being forced out of our town. It's, what is it? It's their time.
The next time you see Sky, it'll be over another town. The next time you take a test, it'll be in some other school. Our parents, they want the best of stuff for us. But right now they gotta do what's right for them. Cause it's their time. Their time. Up there. Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here. That's all over the second we ride up Troy's bucket.
It's like Mikey's pep talk. It's really cheesy, isn't it?
It's cheesy as hell, but...
But I was...
As a kid, I totally bought it. I was like, yeah, tell him.
Yeah, that is your time down there. But when they send up Andy's... it's Troy's sweater, I guess, that she was wearing. Is she going steady with him or whatever?
Yeah.
But I always love when they haul up the bucket. He's, like, laughing while his friends are hauling up the bucket. It's supposedly Andy's...
Don't they know that, you know, the weight difference between a sweater and a person?
And why isn't Troy helping? I don't know, but...
Well, Troy doesn't need to help.
Yeah, he's the rich guy. So yeah. When the bucket gets to the top and it's a sweater, I love the way he goes,
Andy! You goonie!
So earlier we saw him go, Daddy! And now he's like, Andy!
Troy's an asshole.
Yeah, he's a big baby.
There's a scene that they cut out early on in the film whenever they finally escape on bikes. They stop at a, like, the local mini-mart. And that similar thing happens where he starts calling them Goonies. So that's kind of established there.
That's like their nickname?
Yeah.
Because of the Goondocks?
Yeah. And the whole deleted scenes, I'm so glad they took them out. They deserve to be deleted because some of the acting in them is so bad. It's like direct reading from the script.
Right.
It's just painfully awful.
Why wasn't the movie called The Boonies? Like, they were just hanging out at the Boondocks.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't have the rights to it.
I don't know. I was
maybe there's that. Maybe there's something that they left out of the script that it's called the Goonies instead.
Yeah.
I mean, like, why would they put the G? Astoria has no relation to G, so I have no idea. I have no idea.
So we know that Goonies never say die.
Yeah, they don't say die.
Goonies never say die.
But they're in plenty of situations where they can die.
So when they're like, okay, here, guys, this is what we're doing. We're going to stay down here and stick it out and go on an adventure. And they have the whole, here's the little boy's room, here's the little girl's room. That scene cracks me up where he's like, Bran, where are you going? He goes,
this is the men's room.
You guys go.
Men's room, Mikey.
Yeah, we're going to the men's room.
And then
where's that light coming from?
I don't know.
It has this beautiful orange glow.
It's very well lit down there, isn't it?
It is.
And then they have the joke where Andy kisses Mikey on accident. Does he wear braces? But it's funny, later on, Bran figures it out really fast. Where's your braces?
Bran, what happened to your braces?
I wear braces. Mikey wear them. Mikey, that little...
It's like, what? How did he figure that out so fast? He's a really smart guy, isn't he?
He is. He's the smartest of them all.
Bran is super smart.
He's for some reason, he's the smartest and yet the dumbest. Because he just continues along with this craziness.
Eh, what the hell, you know. Data has used his bright lights, right?
Yeah.
I forgot what they're called. Bully blinders. My bully blinders! Bully blinders! He's got that. Bully blinders. And let's see, what else has he used? I guess pretty soon he's going to use his slick shoes, I guess.
No, not quite yet. Slick shoes aren't until later on. Next will be the Pinchers Apparel.
Oh, yeah, Pinchers Apparel. Wait. Doesn't he use the Pinchers Apparel when they do the organ thing?
No, because the organ thing leads to the door to the ship. This is...
Okay, there's one point where Data falls on, almost falls on spikes in the Pinchers
yes,
Apparel.
Yes, this is the Pinchers Apparel.
Pinchers Apparel! You guys, I'll be saved by my Pinchers Apparel!
Okay, I'm just forgetting on why...
What happens is it's the triple stones. They use the key that they found from Chester Copperpot.
And he uses the skull thing on the...
Yeah, Mikey turns it the wrong way. Another trap is triggered.
I love how it's like traps and stuff, and he's like, oh, counterclockwise. He's like, okay. And they don't even think about it for even a split second.
So they, that opens up the trap door. Data falls, and he's saved by the Pinchers Apparel. And he goes, there's another room down here, guys.
They never explained how they get down there when he's hovering above those giant spikes, and those plastic teeth are holding him up. But it's okay. We don't need that, right?
No, it doesn't matter. We're not even thinking about the technicalities of this craziness.
And how did they get down there in any way without a rope or whatever? It doesn't matter. As long as they got...
Well, I'm sure he has one. He has everything in that thing.
But again, as a kid, I thought that was badass. Oh, man, those Pinchers Apparel are awesome.
Absolutely. This is when, after Chunk gets off the phone with the sheriff and Sloth has his fill of Rocky Road, Sloth decides to go down the tunnel, down the fireplace, because he's following his echo.
Right, and then they do the whole pipe gag.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And as they get to the next room, they find that the Fratellis are close on their trail.
Yeah, the Fratellis catch it up to them really fast.
Yeah, really fast.
Like, instantly.
This is the part that always stood out to me, because they're chasing them down, Mama Fratelli and them, and on the close-ups of Mama Fratelli, she breathes, and it's they ADR like a dog.
Yeah, she's like
growling. Yeah, like this.
Yeah, she's like walking really fast.
Yeah, and this is where the slick shoes come into play.
Did you ever wonder what they were going to do when they caught them? Were they going to kill them?
I have to assume so.
Because they keep, like, at one point they do shoot at them.
Yeah, well, yeah, they start shooting at them.
And it's after, I guess, he uses the slick shoes and they both get racked pretty hard.
I got a great idea, you guys! Slick shoes!
Slick shoes, are you crazy?
Data!
And then, for some reason, water starts flowing really heavily.
Right.
Like, it's never explained.
Yeah, it just happens.
Maybe it's part of the trap.
Yeah, if you get racked, the water starts.
And I always wondered, like, do the guys get washed over, or does the water just subside?
Or could they just get down and walk across?
Or did they slide across on their
How does the mom
balls?
Get across? She's an old lady.
Yeah.
I guess she probably figured out you could just walk up the bottom, and it's no big deal. But as they're trying to figure out this is the skeleton piano thing.
The bone organ, yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool. They're like, oh, sick. Oh,
yeah, the design on it is frightening.
Yeah. And I love how they keep establishing Data. He keeps walking. Guys, they're coming. And they're like crawling, like real creepy, you know. And
there's a really fantastic tension in the scene.
Yeah, and then when Data goes back, hey guys, they're gone, and then he's like right there. I always thought it was a really good scene. And then he uses his I don't even know what is the name of his punching.
I don't think it's ever given a name. It's just like this spring-loaded boxing glove.
Yeah, everything has a cool name, but he doesn't have a name for that. What the hell? How could they?
And does he trigger it on purpose? The Fratelli brother grab him.
He just kind of pulls his jacket open. He goes, doosh, and punches him, and they both fall all the way back down the bottom. And I love after that, they show Joey Pants pull out his knife. Like, okay, now I'm going to kill somebody.
Yeah, now it's time to get stabby on these annoying kids. I've crushed my balls. I've lost half my toupee.
And what I love is, you know, earlier, we've got Mouth, and he's got his Spanish, right?
Now, yes.
Andy, she can play the piano.
Barely.
She's had piano lessons. I can't remember. Does Steph at any point use any talent?
These are somebody else's wishes.
I can't remember.
No, other than bitch.
Yeah, and fall in love with Mouth. I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's a strange dynamic there.
Right. So,
because the age difference has to be probably 5, maybe 6 years.
I know, she looks way older than him.
Yeah.
So there's creepy stuff happening in this movie, Bill. I don't know what's going on. So when they do the piano part, that was the most tension part because the Fratellis are like right there. They're trying to play it.
Yeah, and then with each wrong note, a section of the floor falls away.
Yeah, and then Data runs up and he crashes into them, and then they almost die because of that dumbass. It's like, come on, dude. What's your friggin' problem?
Data is a spaz.
He really is. Gotta love Data. But then they... One thing that's funny, if you look at that scene, is that they could have stood on the outside, couldn't they? They never
fell. Because that's what the Fratellis use.
Yeah, the Fratellis just walk on the perimeter of the room, and they're fine. I guess the kids were in a big damn hurry. So
For some reason, they all had to stand in the center of the floor.
Right, and so when they get the drawbridge thing open and they get on it, what lays on the other side, Bill? But, of course, everything that a kid loves, a water slide.
A massively awesome water slide.
That was
like the biggest moment for me. Like, holy shit, I want to be a Goonie now.
Yeah, and go down that water slide, which is actually a natural occurrence, right? Those water slides. There's no way One-Eyed Willie carved those in there, is there?
You know what? There has to be. He has to have carved them because there's multiple exits. So they go down one, and then they get split off into... Maybe him and his guys just got really bored.
And they're like, dude, water slide.
Yeah. I mean, maybe for some reason, One-Eyed Willie was a descendant of Napoleon.
Yeah.
And Napoleon told them about Waterloo. And it was passed down through the ages, and they were like, hey, you know, there's this story about how Napoleon went into the future and then came back and created water slides.
And then you, like, see spikes and spears and stuff, so were they supposed to be impaled on them?
Maybe.
So I
Maybe
just
the
see
water flow sent them over
like
them.
Like, Mouth is like, oh, like right in the lungs. Like, oh, like Mouth never came down.
That would have sucked how that ended.
When they all get down in the water and they turn around and see the pirate ship, what's funny is I have read several times, I'm sure you've heard this too, that Richard Donner didn't let them see the boat until that scene. So it's a natural reaction shot. Except when they turn around, it's a friggin' matte painting, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks very matte-ish.
So they showed them the real boat on the set, but I guess in the movie they're like, eh, that's not dramatic enough. Let's have a matte painting.
Yeah. It looks too much like a set.
Right.
Let's have it look even more like a set.
And somewhere in there, I can't remember when you were talking about it earlier, when Data starts to have a nervous breakdown about all his inventions been working forever and none of them work.
Yeah, that's once they get on the ship, yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's five tiles of falling and then it's tile of skeleton.
Why did you use the stairs?
Use the stairs! 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 The stupid guys up there told you to use the stairs when Data's falling. Data's hurt, nobody's care anymore.
He's okay.
Some guy up there told me I have stupid inventions. And I've been spending months and months and studying on them and inventing.
What a fun I have.
And they're all getting, well, at least Mouthed, he goes, where's the treasure, Mikey? He's like starting to get pissed off.
Yeah, that's whenever they all start getting upset because
there's like nothing here, bud.
There's nothing on the ship. The ship's rotten. Data falls through the ship. He's like, Data is tired of falling and tired of skeletons.
He goes, you should have taken the stairs. Oh, yeah, he tells me, take the stairs. He's got so mad. The scene where they find the chamber, like they open up the little thing and there's writing on a trap door.
Yeah, Andy pulls a string, and they think it's like another trap, but it actually exposes a door that has writing on it.
Yeah, and I wonder if they just cut a huge thing out of there where it was like they read what was on it and it meant something and then they went through, but instead they just start pounding and break through it.
But you're right,
It feels like something was cut out there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, the film moves at such a click that there's definitely moments that were cut. Maybe again, it was a scene; it just didn't work right, or the acting was bad, or
it's awkwardly cut. I think where all of a sudden they find it, and he's up there, and he has this very poignant speech with One-Eyed Willie, right?
One-Eyed Willie.
Hey, yeah, he gets a few moments alone.
We realize that Mikey needs therapy. Right.
Mikey likes to talk to dead people.
And then he looks at his eye, but he's like, you are the first Goonie. And then they have the kids are loud as hell, causing all this racket the whole movie, but somehow they all climbed up there without Mikey hearing them.
Yeah. They're ninjas.
That's where the suspension...
is how long you guys been there?
The
long
suspension
enough,
of
Mikey.
Disbelief doesn't work there for me. There's no way they didn't make any racket going up there.
Yeah.
But leave this treasure for Willie.
And Mikey, Data goes... I think it's Data that reaches for the plate and he's like, no, that's Willie's. Right. And I was like, oh, that's going to come back later.
I would have been like, well, Mikey, he's dead. We need this shit, okay? I'm taking it. But one other thing, that whole trap or rigged booby trap, it sets the boat a sail, right?
Yeah.
But why? What was the point of that? I don't know. Maybe Willie wanted to go on one last sail or something?
One last adventure?
Yeah, even though he's dead? I don't understand what...
Yeah, it does is raise the anchor.
Yeah, raise the anchor. There's no wind to push it out, but still, that's besides the point. But anyway...
Well, it's got a strong current.
But I remember thinking that everyone else thinks when they see the Goonies, which, you know, I'm jumping ahead here, but couldn't they just chase after the boat, like the Coast Guard or something?
Yeah, exactly. I don't see why not. That's what I always thought as a kid, that... At first, I was like, well, they're letting all that gold go. And then I was like, no, somebody will go get it.
There's no way they couldn't go get the boat. It's not a ghost ship where it's going to disappear.
It's not the Flying Dutchman.
Yeah, it's not going to sink under the water. Or even if it did sink, it's not that far from the coast, right?
No.
So, I don't know. You just start to think about, but again, we're in a cartoon, right?
It really is a cartoon.
We're in a Saturday morning cartoon.
It's a Warner Brothers Looney Tunes adventure.
By the way, there's a lot of times where the kids are saying stuff like shit, and it's pretty funny.
Oh, absolutely.
It's usually funny whenever Chunk cusses, but...
My favorite moment of shit goes all the way back to the beginning, where the mother goes, "What is that?
What is that?
Oh, shit, what?
What is that? That is a mess. I want it cleaned up, boys."
"Oh, yeah, sure.
You got it.
Sure."
And Chunk goes, "Oh, shit, what?"
It's just... it's like the crackers and chips all over the floor.
Yeah, he's thinking it's broken statue, and he's, "Oh, shit, what?"
Yeah. And then they're going to make all the kids walk the plank. They're kicking them off the boat.
Yeah, the Fratellis show up while they're taking the gold.
And I'm wondering this, like when they push Andy off and he's like,
"Andy!"
But I'm like, what's the big deal? But then I realize her hands are tied. I guess she's going to drown. Yeah. So
the Fratellis are already killing off the children.
They're going to drown them until Chunk.
No! Captain Chunk!
Captain Chunk. And
this goes back to the TV in the room, Sloth's room, playing Captain Blood.
Yeah, they're
a great theme.
They've got Errol Flynn movies, so now they're inspired by it. And even the score is that.
Yeah, it is. It's the Captain Blood theme.
Dun 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 dun. So they're doing all that, and he's fighting with his brothers, but it's just all kind of goofy. I feel like this part of the movie, they're like, okay, you guys just kind of fight around or something. It'll be funny. And action. And they're like just goofing off or something.
There's a scene in the making of, directed by Mick Garris, which I noticed and made me laugh.
Oh, man.
The making of this like 10-minute featurette on the extras is directed by Mick Garris.
That's hilarious.
But, There's a part where they're on the ship and they're shooting the scenes, and Richard Donner has his head in his hands, sitting there on the ship, just like, what have I gotten myself into? And then Steven Spielberg shows up in his flannel jacket, and he's like kind of reading the script with Richard Donner, trying to explain to him how to shoot the scene and what to do, and... it's just kind of...
That whole pirate ship sequence, I think, is a mess.
It is.
There's no sense of, like, danger anymore.
No.
The Fratellis are
It turns into a cartoon.
Yeah.
Like you said, because they send Steph off, and then they're going to send Mouth... Or they send Andy off, and then they're going to send Mouth and Steph off, and Chunk and Sloth show up.
Go join your friends, you wiggles!
Hey, you go!
And Sloth saves Mouth and Steph, and then the brothers are trying to subdue Sloth, and it turns into like this game,
right,
where they're like playing jump rope with him, and then they try to tie him with a rope, and then he knocks the brothers out, you know, and it's just like, what in the hell is happening here?
Yeah, and the kids they're swimming away. Mikey's like, well, too bad about the treasure. It's where Bran's like, well, it's better to live and be poor or something. They're like, oh, okay. So they give up on the treasure.
Yeah.
And then there's the scene with Mama and...
this is so creepy.
And Sloth. Where,
because he goes, Mama!
You've been bad!
Yeah.
And it's like, oh,
she's
no.
Like, oh, baby. Oh,
baby.
Oh. And then she starts singing
Rockabye Baby.
Rockabye Baby.
Rockabye Baby on the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will bow. When the bar breaks, the cradle will fall.
Break! Fall!
I only dropped you once. Well, maybe twice.
So that's when she said his trigger word and he turns on
her. He throws her overboard.
Which would have killed her instantly, I think, a woman of her age, right?
Well, at least it would have broke a hip, maybe.
It would have been great. Just pull everyone out of the movie. She hits her head on a rock and you just see blood and she floats away.
Yeah. And then the octopus comes back and eats her.
The octopus. Yeah, we forgot about the octopus sequence they cut out of the movie.
You forgot about the octopus for a reason.
You know, when I was a kid, when that movie came out, I had the Goonies Collector magazine. And mm-hmm. I saw that you can get the Goonies Collector's Edition Blu-ray that comes in a box bill. And inside it, they have a miniature version of that magazine. And I almost wanted to buy it just to have that miniature version of the magazine back, because I read that thing until it was falling apart when I was a kid. But in it, they explain about the breakdancing octopus. And I was like, oh, man, what is that? And when I saw the movie, I was like, there was no octopus in there. But then at the end of the movie, who is it that says it? Like, Data goes,
yeah.
The octopus was very scary.
Octopus?
Yeah, it was very dangerous.
And I was like, what? There's no octopus.
Yeah, you're thinking like it's an exaggeration.
Yeah, it's like that. There's no octopus in the movie. But then you can go on YouTube right now and type in Goonies octopus sequence, and you can watch where this octopus attacks them in the water.
It's right after they all come out of the chutes, and Mouth and Steph are kind of hugging, and then they're like, wait, what? You know, kind of push each other away.
And so they push a Walkman in his mouth. No, it was like the tape recorder.
It wasn't a Walkman because it had a speaker on it, apparently.
Yeah, it's just like a regular tape recorder that they had. I guess Data had it or something, but it's playing music in the... They stuff it in the octopus's mouth, and
it like moonwalks in the water away.
Yeah, he's like starts dancing and moving around. So
yeah.
It was really badly animated. I mean, like the
mechanical creature is so bad.
Yeah, and it's just stupid.
Yeah, it really is. They probably saw that and went, you know what, this is just really stupid.
This is even too stupid for this movie. So
yeah.
Because when you think about they've got Chunk and this deformed guy with super strength who are best friends. They come and save the day.
Oh, speaking of super strength, that's what I forgot. After he saves Steph and Mouth, and before the brothers attack him, he rips his shirt open and it's...
We're in deep shit now, Francis.
Oh, shit.
The Superman logo, and they play that little John Williams.
Bum, 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 bum,
and he goes, Sloth!
Yeah.
And so I guess now he's Super Sloth.
And then also remember Richard Donner directed Superman.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
And what's funny is the brothers go, oh, shit.
They know.
He thinks he's Superman. Now we're screwed. So when he saves them all and they go out on the beach and the boat sails or whatever, well, that happens in a bit. But, the family's all there and, you know, we're having a reuniting.
We also get Richard Donner's scene in the film.
Yeah, he's one of the cops, but...
Well, I'll be damned. It's them goobers.
It's those goobers.
You've also got... Yeah, why does he say that? Is that the original title of the movie?
The goobers.
So when...
they couldn't use it because of the chocolate-covered peanuts.
Why didn't he say Goonies there? It's those Goonies. I don't understand that.
It's them goobers.
But his Data's dad has his own invention with the camera, which is like the worst invention I've ever seen.
Why? You can't hold a camera?
It's not practical in any way. I mean, they could easily fit in his pocket. And also all the film comes spilling out. And Andy, that part, I don't know why it always bothers me. She goes, oh, this is funny. He's just like his father. It's like...
Yeah.
We don't need a commentary.
Well, if you look at that scene and you look at the two people with her that are playing her parents, they're just like,
why are we here? They've never even met.
What is she talking about?
Who is this? This is our daughter.
Who is this person?
My favorite part of the whole scene, that whole ending, though, is when Chunk goes,
Sloth, you're going to live with me now. I'm gonna take care of you. Because I love you.
I love you, Chuck.
Oh, I love you, Sloth.
What? Did he even talk to his parents yet?
No, of course not.
If you looked at Sloth and saw your kid standing next to him, he goes, he's gonna come live with us, what would you do?
Yeah. There's a lot of really weird moments at this end. Especially, you know, whenever the Fratellis arrive and all the kids rush to save Sloth.
Yeah.
But
they've got guns drawn, Bill.
Yeah.
They're ready to friggin' shoot the guy.
And I almost think, the hell is that?
It might have been a more poignant ending had they gunned down Sloth.
Once the kids save him, why has nobody gone, what the hell is this thing?
They're like, oh, okay, it's cool. And even the parents are like, well, we welcome Sloth with open arms into our house. He'll live in the attic.
Hey, you guys!
And then, hey, you guys! And then when the dickheaded rich guy and Troy come, and he's like, yeah.
Oh, but you're missing after he says to Sloth that you're going to come live with me. He goes, he tells Sloth that he loves him.
Yeah, he goes, I love you.
It's like, wait a second.
Well, also, I forgot earlier when Sloth is holding up the rock so they can escape, there's the very uncomfortable scene of Chunk with his head between Sloth's legs.
Sloth, love Chunk.
Professing his love of him.
Yeah.
It's really just oddly staged, that scene. Am I right?
Yeah, as a kid, I had no problem with it. As an adult, I'm creeped out.
Dude, why is his head between his legs while he's telling him this?
And why does he keep saying, oh, I love you, Sloth? Yeah, don't.
Stop. Why do you love him so much? Just go away, kid.
You just met him less than an hour ago. And you love him?
It's an hour. It's only been an hour.
Yeah.
Like, how long have Chunk and Sloth been underground looking for them?
Yeah, there's no idea of time.
The passage of time in the movie makes it seem like they've been in there a week or something, doesn't it? Like, him and Sloth have become really good buddies.
Well, apparently the kids have been, they've been looking for them for... Oh,
where does... I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when Chunk and Sloth show up, where did they get the pirate hat and the sword? They haven't even been on the ship yet.
There's a deleted scene.
Oh, okay.
There's a deleted scene where they find that stuff. Yeah.
That should have been in the movie, damn it.
It's actually a pretty good scene because Chunk is talking about his relatives.
Oh, okay.
And about how he's got a cousin or an uncle that is ugly and looks a little like Sloth. Yeah, I mean, it's a great scene.
That I'm going to say, when the movie's wrapping up and everything, Chunk and Sloth are my favorite parts of the movie.
Absolutely.
Now, when I was a kid, I was like, Data's inventions and stuff, but really, they really suck.
Yeah. My favorite, as the film's wrapping up, my favorite is just how monstrous the Fratellis are, how they have absolutely no care for anyone. I mean, they really are truly psychopaths.
They even hate each other.
Yeah, and they even hate each other, and Sloth and Chunk.
Yep.
I believe that relationship, that they are brothers, and they love one another deeply.
And I still think that scene's weird when the daddy's about to sign, and she goes, no sign!
No, she's like, ay, Dios mío! Yes. And then she starts saying something, he's like, no pen? No right?
No pen?
No pen?
No what?
No right?
No pen, man!
No what?
No sign!
No sign!
No sign!
No sign!
No sign! And then he'll run to it and rip it up. Like, what?
But when the dad, he's like, we're not signing anything! And he throws the papers up and...
There'll be no more signing today or ever again!
After they pour the jewels out, I was just like, what is... Their dad is really weird, man. That whole scene is awkward the way
it kind of explains how bizarre the family is.
Maybe that was his therapeutic outburst after all of his worrying about money. And that, how much could those jewels be worth? Could it really...
If they're trying to imply that those are diamonds and rubies and sapphires, those are just the diamonds alone. Those things were enormous. Those are like blood diamonds.
Yeah.
So those things had to be worth a couple million a piece. So just the diamonds.
So they're definitely well-to-do now. They're well-off.
I don't know. How many houses are in foreclosure?
I don't know.
I think they're going to be able to pay off the homes, and then it's just going to be the Goondocks again.
Right. So everything is... It ends happy, Bill, doesn't it?
They don't have to leave. They're not rich, but they don't have to leave.
Yeah. So this has been a visit to the Goonies, one of our favorite 80s movies, Bill.
Yeah. And, I mean, it doesn't hold up nearly as well as it does as a kid, but I still really enjoy watching it.
So do I. Yeah, I do too. I think if, say, an adult were to watch it now, like who'd never seen it, it's hard to believe they would like it. You know what I mean?
Like are you saying like an 18-year-old kid now?
Yeah, just somebody who's
someone
never,
that was born just 18 years ago, completely missed out on the whole 80s thing.
Never heard of the Goonies, just sits down to watch it, would go, what is this pile of shit?
Yeah, this is a movie of its time.
Right, because a lot of what we like about it has to do with nostalgia.
Yeah.
Has to do with, you know, being a kid back in that time. There aren't a lot of 80s references except for, I mean, references.
The Mark Sheen thing.
What I mean is references of the time. Other than, like, the Gremlins reference. But, I mean, you know, they're wearing Nikes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the movie's a lot of fun. It's also goofy as hell. And not everything is well staged. And it seems rushed at times. But I still I get a lot of enjoyment out of the Goonies.
Yeah. So do I. It's, and you're absolutely right. It's rushed. It's not particularly well edited. It's some of the...
it has sequences that are well edited. I still think the opening sequence is well
edited. Yeah, it has sequences. Some of the... It just... Some of it doesn't fit well together, I should say.
And also, the music is great, I think. The score.
The score is iconic. So much of the music, you know, not even just the theme, but the moments, like the music during the water slide, and then there's kind of a theme. I don't know whose theme it is or what it's called, but it's this moment where it's like it fits kind of this whimsical quality of it.
And also product placement. I noticed the Domino's pizza box and the Pepsi. Cool.
Yeah, the Pepsi.
And I don't know what that ice cream was. I just figured it was some.
Yeah, it looked like some fake or local brand.
Yeah, Chunk says Swenson's, but I don't know.
There's a moment where he's like, oh, soda pop, I'm so thirsty.
He just says soda pop. Oh, man, Pepsi. Oh, Tab. Oh, delicious.
Pepsi free.
Oh, man, new Coke. I love this stuff.
New Coke. Oh, it tastes like Pepsi.
So I would say those were our bullet points right there, kind of what we're talking about. But I had a blast, Bill, revisiting the Goonies.
Same here. I give you one sloth scream.
Bill, it was great revisiting the Goonies and the 80s. Wasn't it great when we traveled back in time to see this again in a theater?
It is. I love it.
I tried really hard not to step on a butterfly or anything like that. Hopefully we didn't mess with our time stream. Or maybe
no, I think we're safe.
Oh, good. Maybe we're in a different time stream now. I don't know.
An alternate time stream.
Where a Goonies 2 was made.
Where Terra Nova was built.
It is strange in a time where when movies were successful, they had instant sequels, that this never had a sequel.
Well, it did have a Nintendo sequel.
Right. The Nintendo game was actually fun, I remember.
It wasn't bad. It was a little frustrating, but yeah, it wasn't bad.
Well, Bill, everybody, thank you for visiting the Goonies with us. Revisiting the Goonies, I should say, because I know everybody has watched it a million times, right, Bill?
I hope so.
And for those of you who've never seen the Goonies, this is an excuse to watch it and then hear what we say. So we'd like
to see if you agree or disagree.
Yeah, we'd love to hear what you say about it in our forum or on Facebook, so check us out there. And again, guys, thanks for supporting Nowhere in Mulberry. We love you. And come and listen to our next 80s movie. You'll have to wait and see what it is. What could it be, Bill?
I'm not sure. There's so many that's so good.
We'll surprise you. Check you next time. Bye, guys.
Rocky Road?
Now this is podcasting.